Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Rethinking Work. Following on from last week's fantastic circular economy episode, we have Nicholas Morenci, who is the founder and CEO of Preview 3D, who I'm going to go out there and say they're one of the most innovative kind of scanning tech companies out there. And they kind of look at digital twins, but I guess that's just what they do now, but they have massive ambitions to try and digitize all of the environments we're in, and they use gaming engines and all this kind of cutting edge technology to create an incredibly simple and easy to use product that is genuinely changing how people interact with these virtual buildings. We talk all about the fact that this is his first ever trip to London. He's actually from Montreal, which is where the company's based, how he went from working basically for a CAD manufacturer and decided to quit his job, start his own business, and now is a multi-million pound business with, I think, 30 people now with like global outreach. We talk all about how that grew, how he got investment, and what we think the future of digital twins and these virtual environments are going to be. And it's really exciting. And as Bill winds me up regularly in the episode, I try and not geek out too much about scanning technology, because if you're one of the followers on our Instagram feed, you'll know that I have loved all of the adoption of scanning and how you can put it into render engines and create incredible bits of art. And Nicholas is really kind of paving the way for what I think the future of scanning and digital twins is. So enjoy the episode. Check us out on ablepartners.co.uk or find us on Instagram and Twitter at able_partners. Enjoy. Right. Welcome to Rethinking Work. This is our second series. Previously, we've had nothing but London voices, so we've gone as far afield as Montreal. So we are joined today by Nicholas, the founder of Preview 3D, which, in my eyes, and I'm sure you'll agree, is one of the most interesting and most innovative kind of scanning companies. But just quickly, why don't you give us a bit of background about Preview 3D?
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Background about Preview. So, came from nothing. Preview is really a tech company. We're trying to make the benefits of reality capture technology accessible. So typically today you're going to use a 3D scanner to take measurements. They create massive amount of data, but that leaves a lot of people out of it. So we created a tech that allow us to take those massive point clouds and turn them into lightweight deliverable, like a video game of real life. And that's really
well. One of the things that grabbed me straight away was, this was maybe 3 months ago, we just got all these like new iPhones and they've got the amazing LiDAR technology on. But what was amazing was we, on our previous series, we chatted to quite a few people who understood the kind of benefits of digitizing the physical world. And you were putting on some of the most interesting examples of that. And we'll come on to that in a bit. But I think we should just take a step back as well and say that you've actually traveled. This is your first time in London ever.
Absolutely.
And you've been in, Chichester yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then you've literally traveled all the way up straight into like the middle of London, straight to our studio.
Nicholas is my new hero. Yeah. He's turned up. He's like, I'm coming into a place called London. I'm not going to do the voice. I'm not going to do this. And he's coming straight into a place called London Bridge. And we're like, oh my God, you've got to come to Haggerston. And you've just arrived. Never been anywhere else in London. I'm so impressed and really grateful for you coming today. It's sort of massive hero of mine now. So
not only are you super well traveled, you are the you're definitely going to potentially win the longest distance anyone's traveled to come on the podcast. But we do have someone from Auckland, New Zealand next week, so you won't hold the crown for a huge amount of time.
But can I just ask a pop question? First impressions coming into London. You've been here what, 2 hours now? Genuinely, looking out the window, what do you think?
Well, your yard is amazing. Let's start with that one.
I wasn't praying.
I tell you, the what we're missing in my place is really this all historic buildings everywhere. And I think this is lovely. So I really love the history of the site. I didn't get a chance to really walk through the city, so I guess I'm going to have to update you later.
Well, also, one of the coolest things is these historical buildings. Scanning all this stuff, we were talking earlier, so you've already been here for about half an hour, been outside trying desperately not to chat about all the most interesting things before we record the podcast. But I guess one of the things that I've like loved was, well, actually, if I rewind 10 years ago, point cloud, all of these scans, so unusable, so heavy, so difficult to like engage with. Suddenly in the last year, I feel like consumers and customers have caught up and everyone can kind of play around with the software. And I think to give kind of Preview 3D its props is that yours is the first one that I've seen that allows you to manipulate the scan, which I think is really interesting. So you're able to not just take a scan of an area, but then actually pick pieces up, move pieces around. So I guess you're massively commercially focused. So you're working with some bigger companies that we can't mention, but what's coming up? What's been the big thing over the last year then for Preview?
I think a big part of what we achieve now is really automation. Using a computer to process point clouds was really hard. It takes way too long in expertise. So now we were inspired by WeTransfer. So you drag and drop your data and click process, and that's all you have to know in order to leverage the data. And to kind of work with what you're saying regarding this year, what's happening. This is what happened when Apple start to join a market. I think they could have waiting, but when they go, it's the right time. So we're just lucky that we started this company 5 years ago, and now everything seems to be the time to actually go out and start to scale.
I was asking Nicholas about, you know, working and how Montreal had reacted to COVID and what the reality was, and he said, and you know, to quote you, you can tell me if it was right, but actually, other than the obvious humanitarian challenges and tragedies of it, actually it kind of completely drove this virtual reality, a real digital world, and you know, fortune favors the prepared mind. You were there, but actually it really helped your whole industry. Is that fair?
So true. I think it's sad that the pandemic was like a terrible experience for everyone, but it really just gave a reason why you need to have access to site from remote and why we should limit traveling, and that it's possible today to just get access to reality from remote.
I mean, it's worth saying, Ben loves scanning for some inexplicable reason. I've known Ben for over 10 years, and I don't know, every time it comes up, he gets really, really excited about it, whether it was stitching together old photographs years ago or now this. So it's a particular passion of Ben's, and that's probably...
Well, the reason that... Okay, so... We were talking earlier about, you know, you were joking that you're lazy, so you developed an entire software platform to speed up your working. I actually think a lot of what an architect needs to do is convey an information and stories. And it happens to be that sketching was previously by far the fastest way of doing it. I'm always looking for ways that we can create something fun for a client to engage with in the fastest way that's also really visual. I'm a hyper visual person, and I think most people are. And we were discussing this a minute ago, that you can go to a client's studio, building, whatever, scan it on a phone now, put it into a piece of software, and within an hour, I can have an almost photorealistic environment with their VR goggles on, and I can do some quick massing in a 3D model, and they're just literally gobsmacked that you can do it that quickly, and then you're like, yeah, it's awesome.
What you touched on about, like, the imperfections are what makes it a real place. So having a virtual meeting in my garden... Yeah, I'm still able to project a lot of myself onto it. It's still like the connection feels more valuable than if we were in a kind of neutral space. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, reality speaks for itself, and it's impossible to replicate the complexity of it. So this is, I think, the most engaging content you can bring to your computer. And it's fast as hell now with cell phones. So why try to go differently and model everything?
And I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm gonna drop the metaverse clanger in here and say...
Have a bell.
You know, we used to think, you know, this kind of clunky, sort of cartoonish reality of... it. No one really bought that as a concept. Do you think this is, in fact, what we're talking about, the metaverse? It's like a digital twin which, as closely as possible, resembles the real world and ultimately maybe is, you know... sort of re-updating and saving over itself the whole time as the real world changes. Is that where you see us heading?
Yes, this kind of notion of bringing the world, the reality to the digital world is a big part of what I think should be the metaverse. And obviously keeping it constantly up to date. Like, I capture your garden, it's going to change tomorrow, it's not up to date. But now if you think about cell phones and whatnot, everybody has one in their pocket. So if you can contribute with all the community to keep it up to date, and then you start to segment the space, and now you have that chair that you're moving around, which you can carry information, and like, hey, the queen was sitting there.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, just before you arrived, I was looking at Instagram, and Ray-Ban have just launched their first generation digital glasses, and they're going to be much better this time next year. I'll still probably buy them, but I'm thinking that if everyone
please don't buy them, please don't. Buy
I look
them.
Like
no,
a
this
cool
is one of
guy.
Your ridiculous tech purchases.
Hey, it's good to be on the leading edge of this stuff. But you can imagine everyone's walking around and it's kind of constantly updating in real time. The other thing I'd like to just talk about the business a bit because it's so inspiring. You know, you made it sound very straightforward when we spoke about it. Oh, I put together this and we made our own platform and suddenly everyone wants it, and you put it down to luck, but it clearly isn't. I'd like to talk about this use case that Ben hinted at, where you are going into complex manufacturing environments, complex in that they've been layered up over time rather than the product is complicated. It might be someone making packaging seafood or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about why this product has become so valuable to someone like Kellogg's or something?
First off, the industry is what we call brownfield. So think about the oil and gas, it's been out there for a long time. Think about beers as well. So those facilities are not documented in any form other than maybe blueprints, AutoCAD floor plan. So for them to make the first step into a 3D environment, this is where 3D scanning comes in. And typically today you would go and model over your point cloud because it's too heavy. And you would make a CAD model environment. So the reason why I guess we were useful is that we accepted that the reality was the base map. And then we could start building on top of it. So we could be helping engineers do a pre-design and communicate across the entire company shareholders. Like, let's say there's a lot of people involved in a project. They normally wouldn't care about the guy next to them. They would work on their own stuff. But if you present them with, hey, here's the new layout for this production line, now they kind of have that liability to talk and say, well, it's not going to fit there. Oh, where do I put my electrical box? Hey, the employee, how do I bring the material to the machine? So now you're kind of able to put everyone on the same vision, and it speaks to non-technical users.
And you describe Preview3D as a purely software company. You don't get involved in the kind of hardware side at all, or no?
No.
Because that's really interesting, because you can't say what's coming up specifically, but I guess the reason there's so much interest in what you're doing is because you have a unique take on the software. Like I guess the thing that caught my eye was I like the way it's called Preview3D, and the way your marketing works is that you can lift stuff out and move it around. Is that unique to Preview?
Yeah, and that's like the first patent we have. So you start with reality, but obviously you're going to have to move stuff around and maybe move it to another side. So facility relocation was one of the use cases we had. So I was just thinking, okay, it's like, can we go beyond just looking at it? And this idea of to be able to take a pair of scissors and just clip that out, move it around, and then you can put other CAD files in it, was really just the basic of what I needed. Like, I put it on a PDF, and I went to see a dev, and I said, like, this is what I want. It took me a couple of devs to find a guy that would finally make it work. But yeah, that was like the first feature we had.
And you talk about, Ben's point about communication. Actually, it can be a little bit exclusive or excluding architectural information. You've got to be comfortable reading plans or elevations or even 3D geometries. Well, suddenly you're there with a floor manager who you rotate something into position. He's then included in this process, and he can point out, well, that'll never work because we always need access. Whereas actually we tend to take things a bit further down the line before we actually talk to the guy that's repairing them, installing them, maintaining them. And he says, well, how are we meant to get our MUP in there or whatever? It just feels a really inclusive way of designing. And although Ben's obsessed with scanning, even I'm coming around to the idea that this is actually like not only fast, but better.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I was very excited about, and you actually sent me a video a couple of days ago, but we were talking to Gavin Paul, who's the CEO of Heres. And Heres is this amazing Olympic development, and it's like a tech innovation hub. It used to be the old broadcasting center for the Olympics in 2012, and he's developed it into this like mecca for tech, for gaming, and it's incredible. And one of his challenges is he wants people from all around the world to come and visit the site. How can you do that? Well, websites, videos is one thing, but if you can build a 3D environment that you can actually move around, and you know, that's why we jokingly said the metaverse bell. But that metaverse idea came up, and we were discussing it, and The idea that I use this term a lot, gamification. I hear it all the time. I was like, why hasn't anyone put these massive scans or the metaverse in the Unreal Engine? And then you showed a kind of, was it a street or like on a neighborhood, and you'd scanned it and it was super detailed and you were running around in it in the Unreal Engine. And yeah. I was like, there you go.
That's it. Yeah. And there's this kind of space and time where game engines are advanced. Reality capture workflows are faster than ever. Quality is there as well. So I think it's just, we have to keep in mind people have terrible computers.
Yeah.
And it has to work on a terrible computer, and they don't have time. And so it has to be like the arrows, yeah, or WASD or AZERTY. I don't know how you do it, guys.
Yeah, but yeah.
Gaming, right? So it has to be accessible to everyone. So we really tried to keep it stupid simple, so you could jump on the app and have basically no trainings. Like if I have more than 10 buttons, I'm losing the game. I need to have just what's needed in order to bring more people engaged with the reality.
And are you... you're predominantly in the kind of industrial sector, in the very commercial sector. Is this kind of technology that you, because you've got a patent on it, is it branching out into things other than that, or are you keeping it?
Well, I mean, I started with fixing my own problem in food and beverage, but definitely there's traction for this product in various fields. There's a lot of projects that I can't mention, but let's take one that I think is not a problem. So big oil and gas companies are now transitioning to energy. And so they need to go fast because they have this kind of responsibility to do it. So typically you would go and try to do the engineering and then move forward, but that process takes a long time. Now we typically have 3 to 4 people working on it. And our clients are like, we have 100 people now using your app because everybody gets it. Nobody has to fly the site, and we're able to communicate much faster, much better with everyone involved. So that was kind of the use case, new to me, still commercial, but now it's extending to a lot of different markets, which are like, think about VFX and gaming and whatnot.
The gamification lends itself to being quite sort of intuitive and quick to pick up, because that's kind of fundamental to gaming. So you mentioned your patents. What are they? How many have you got? The first one you mentioned was this sort of ability to move assets, so they're almost separated from the other mesh. Do you like talking about your patents, or do you?
Oh, it's fine. I mean, this is what they're for. There's this notion of a black box. So there, sometimes when you go to a good restaurant, his recipe is a secret. He's not going to like patent it. So we definitely have some of those recipes.
Because a friend of mine is a patent lawyer, and he says, actually, the best way of keeping a secret is not to patent it.
Exactly.
Because you don't have to publish it.
Exactly. But in some cases where you're really trying to be forward thinker and want to have kind of an edge on a competition, you may want to do patents, just because in some cases they're more obviously going to be needed. This is where you want to put a patent, because they're... like you could replicate them. Maybe they're not the most technical, but the most useful.
That's so interesting. We hadn't said, how many people is Preview now?
30.
30, wow. And is this all in Montreal, or have you got offices around?
So we are just in Montreal, hopefully opening an office in Europe by next year. But mostly software engineers. Young, talented geniuses.
So I'm just thinking about that growth. To scan premises, you don't have to do the scan to grow the software business, do you? You just have agents that can scan it. You can use any other cameras. So you can expand into North America and Europe without having to move your technical base.
Yeah, we have reseller today in New Zealand and Australia. We have like people that just come to the website with the data and just process it. So it's really a self-service solution. But in some cases where we serve bigger clients, they don't care about a point cloud. They want the deliverable. So we also help them to make the bridge between the community of 3D scanning and the client, just so he comes to site, deliver the data, and he doesn't have to know about 3D scanning requirements.
So if I'm if I own a big factory, then you guys, or I would have the scan done in as detailed as possible, send it to you guys, and then do you like clean up the model, as in if they want to move bits of machinery around, do you then get in there and like clean it up for them?
So we do no services. It's really automated. So we kind of have preferred scanning equipment. that we build custom recipes, and this is where the black box. So we harmonize colors and we remove moving objects, and we're going to try to make it as sharp as possible, make it as lightweight as possible with preserving details.
Oh, so if there's people walking around the factory and your cameras catch it, you can blur, the get rid of those people, so it's a clean model, and that's all it's automated.
Yeah, it's all automated.
Mental. I mean, I think I was blown away with some of the things that you said, Nicholas, before this started. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about the kind of start of this business? You're 30 people. You've mentioned some clients that we probably can't mention here, but are some of the biggest and most progressive in the world. You seem to wear the success quite lightly, which is fantastic. But I wonder if you could tell a little bit about that story from a guy working in M&E, food and beverage, transitioning to an entrepreneur, venture capital, raising money, building a team. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I never planned to start a company. I was just faced with an AutoCAD floor plan when I started my first job. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to use a software that dates from 1982 as my main job. So I told my boss back then, can I use 3D modeling instead of AutoCAD? He was like, yeah, for sure. So I started to just go to saw it, take measurements, model everything. But I quickly realized that even the CAD environments today, SolidWorks and Vander, they're meant to create a machine, not a plant where you bring a lot of external files in them. So when I was spending 6 months to make a 3D model, nobody but me could open it. What's the value in it? Yeah. And so we went to a trade show and that was the start of VR. So there was a big booth, Bosch. And I mean, I was 25. So I go to the booth and it was what do you want, kid? I was you use this? They're no, this is for the trade show. But at that point, I was well, why the heck can you have an Xbox 360 that's cost a couple of $100 and have GTA 5 scale? And I have a $5,000 computer where I can't model a small section of a facility with 100 machines in it. And so I just went on forums and discovered it myself and just copy-pasted lines of code inside the Unity game engine. And it really started from there. The second step was no way I'm spending 6 months again modeling everything. So the Xbox Kinect,
the freedom.
Yeah, so the Xbox Kinect came out and it was it was a bulky sensor, but the company called Matterport started to put them together and make a swipe 360. So you could start to have kind of this visual model of reality. So I reached out to them and I was can I have just what's behind this? And they gave her early access to it. And this is where really it all started, mixing reality with design files.
And this was using it in a use case while working for someone else to solve customers' problems in manufacturing.
Absolutely. Yeah, small engineering firm of three people.
And this was going well, and I can imagine the kind of person you were here, now fundamental to their kind of project management. And then you thought, I'm going to go for this. This has got other applications.
Yeah, you seem so relaxed about it. What made you think, I'm going to start a company? Yeah, I should patent that. How have you had any business experience before running a company?
Not at all. I used to flip antique cars. I was into car at university and I had no job. So I would buy old cars and restore them. That was my only business experience. But wax them, put nice wheels on them and flip them. That was my only business.
So you need to be a bit crazy. You said that before. So you left with an idea, with a customer to come with
you? Yeah. By the time I came back from that winter break, I came back to the facility and I shared them, the group of engineers, a video game of the facility. So now everybody could walk through the design and they were like, holy kid, this is amazing. So my boss gave me a $6,000, okay, now you can invest in this idea. And I found a guy at the university that was the research guy, and he referred to me, an employee, the first guy to work with. And we made an MVP of a very simple app that I presented later that year to a group of engineers. And on that first presentation, we signed 3 facilities. So I was flying around with my backpack, making, $100,000 within the first 3 months of the company. Well, not even being a company. Right. So I was maybe I can, there's something underneath here. I think my current salary is not up to par with this potential.
And this app that you created, was this anyone with this app in the facility could just go on it and zoom around it, like Google Maps. You just move
unlimited users.
Unlimited users.
Yeah. So anyone with, like, it's an executable at first. You just have to click on it and no installation, no nothing. It just runs like a video game.
And then they can be, oh, where's the broom cupboard? It's just around there behind the machine. You just fly through it on your phone.
Yeah. Walk through reality.
So obvious when you say it like that.
And then making some money straight away means that it's proof of concept. There's a bit of sort of traction for people to invest. And people know immediately you're going to have like customers. And so what was the stage then? Was there a realization, I can grow, or, oh, I want this to be successful and I need more capital? Because it sounds like you're making money to grow.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing was like, okay, how do I learn how to become an entrepreneur? Like, what's the game? So I kind of knocked to the door of a tech incubator in Montreal. And normally you would have to have a team and whatnot. So people were super prepared. And I was just flying back from Vancouver and had a good time right before leaving. So I arrived to that pitch where everybody's like super stressed and prepared. And I'm like wearing like a Donald Duck, like that boy. And alone, no team. But I'm like, guys, I think I'm onto something.
Being a bit of a tech rock star, if I can say, like, a bit disheveled, the idea is so good.
I was really just bold about it. And they were like, all the judge said no, but there was a guy who said veto on that guy. And that's really like because of him that I made it through. And I learned so much in that kind of 4 months intense incubator about how to raise capital, what's the legal terms, what's the IP. And like just
Do they give you like advice like don't do that, don't sell that, don't cash out now, do this, make sure you get this? I mean, did they give you that kind of safety net, or did you have to just work it out on your own?
They did give a lot of advice, but the main advice is get out there, talk to people, validate your idea. Like, you're gonna spend a lot of years into this. Like, you better make sure that it's a value, because otherwise you're gonna spend years of your youth into this project.
Because, I mean, we were discussing that, you know, no one really knows what a metaverse is or anything, but you could argue that every single little model, if everyone can pile in it, can you see how many people are in it? Or is there's not live avatars in it. Is that a thing?
You're kind of a visionary person. The live avatars are coming in next week.
And nice. What will that mean?
I think there's like this notion of industrial space. It's still humans. So the idea that you're able to collaborate and review, why not do it together? Currently, we have like a desktop software and a web software where you can go and review the design and annotate and whatnot. But to have the ability to be there in real time instead of being me just screen sharing to other people, maybe they can follow you and then walk by themselves through the design and start to collaborate better.
So treating me like the sort of Luddite that I am, I'm imagining like you're playing Halo or something and the other guy is another soldier kind of thing. Is that what you're thinking? You're looking at the same information, or...
Well, if this was a room and we were online, I'd see where we were. So,
yeah.
So if there's 50 people on
Nicholas
a site...
smirked when I said Halo. Halo, you're such a vintage reference, dude.
No,
Mario Kart, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely have Switch at the office.
I mean, we've touched on this before, so we won't, but that idea of a shared experience, it makes it more memorable and you can talk about the detail.
I think it's just, at this point, we did not build the tech to do the avatars, more the back end of it. And there's this beautiful company out there that was building this user experience to create an avatar. You take a single picture of your face and you're almost ready. And so just at this point, it's more, why not? It's just so cool. Why not do it? Like, we heard a lot about the buzzwords and what.
Well, I guess
it's possible. So just
on a production facility, something that is so complicated, you know, as in the bigger they are. I mean, if you're going to like a car manufacturer or something, they're huge. You suddenly, if you have avatars, you can get heat maps. You can work out like where most of the people walk when they go in there, you know, because and then you can kind of get genuine digital information that would very easily replicate itself in the real world, because you know that corner of the factory, no one's even looked at it. No one's even been in the little avatar and looked at it yet.
If think about security. If you hit your face with like the avatar, you're going to hit your face in real life. And security is a big concern to a lot of those big companies.
Oh, like confidentiality and things.
No, you know? No, I mean security, like health and safety. So it's stupid, but it's so important. Can I navigate efficiently through those new machines? Can I drive that lift truck around?
Oh, interesting.
So this is kind of a real-time simulation.
Oh, I see.
You'll go walk through it. What do you think? Put notes. Like, this is stupid. This is going to hit my head.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Here's the forklift. I actually can't drive it through. I've tried.
So it's a sort of performance, like a simulation from a safety perspective. I mean, maybe if we take a like, slightly more helicopter view of like cities, and we're focusing on cities really outside London for this series. And I think there are applications here for how you can experience public realm and space. And as ever, industrial use cases drive the technology, because you've got car manufacturers or technology firms that have the cash to push this, or, you know, the surgeon improving his performance with a piece of tech. It's worth $6,000, but it's not worth $6,000 for me to, I don't know, help my kid with their homework or something like that. So I see the driving use cases now, but there are some great like public service, like civic applications of something like this. I mean, looking forward 10 years to when you're still probably even younger than me now, you know, where is this gonna go?
I really think the foundation of all of this is reality. And you're so right about like city and how valuable it's going to be, because every time you do a new project in a city, people don't want the city to change. So if you're able to engage with others and communicate better what are the change of the city are coming and have them involved, that's going to be extremely valuable. Today, how do they do this? They bring 20 people in a room that give their opinion for a park that they're going to spend $100 million and is going to change the face of a city. So this is kind of where reality,
I think that's the
bang speaks on for itself.
Case. I mean, we do these things called consultations, but what they really are is that, now it's probably a bit disloyal. We do consultations with communities about planning, and it's really, you know, it is listening, but it's often telling people what's going to happen. And a tool like this, I mean, actually everyone with a smartphone can actually stand on their apartment balcony and see what the quality of light is going to change. And, you know, we did a project in central London, and we just went onto people's balconies and sketched it. And it was quite romantic, but it's not that sort of data driven or useful in fact. And to be able to say, look, you really are not gonna have an overshadowing issue here, or this is what it's gonna look like, I think that's a brilliant example.
Because my dream essentially, and you watching you in the Unreal Game Engine in a factory was the first time I've kind of seen a smaller version of it. But imagine St. Paul's Cathedral beautifully scanned. Even now I can put a scan in our Enscape engine and you can go day to night, you know, you can watch how the sun would come in, how what it would be like at night. If I've got St. Paul's at night and I can go around it and literally see what it looks like at night, and then if I go in during the day, anyone that's doing the same thing as me is an avatar. I can see all these people in St. Paul's. I can't get rid of them, but I can go there late at night and I can see it. It would make me want to go to St. Paul's even more, because I'd be like, oh, it's so much more impressive to see it in real life. But to have virtual tourism feels like an amazing opportunity, I think.
I think the freedom to navigate in those environments and the quality we're able to achieve today with different type of scanning devices,
yeah,
it just makes it viable and to deliver it for a lot more than just the industrial sector we're doing, for sure.
Because I guess we should touch on the cameras that you guys use. I mean, you can scan it on a phone and you can use some simple software, but it's very basic. You can't really go very high. The stuff that you use, I mean, I was looking, you know, you had parts of leaves and trees and, you know, the stem of a wine glass and things, you know, it's hyper detailed. Is that like really data heavy, you know, like ultra data heavy?
So we really like the laser scanners, because they're active sensors. So you're able to just capture a lot of data. So every time you put the sensor down and click play, it's going to take a minute and 50, capture a gigabyte of data. So for a facility, we're talking thousands of scans. So this is kind of the most valuable data to us, because it's able to achieve two goals. You're going to have the accuracy needed for reverse engineering down the road for this project. So you're capturing and taking value earlier, but you're also able to capture the imagery. So a big part of what we're doing is we're combining the imagery on top of the scan data and making like triangles and basically wrapping the texture on it. There's other workflows where you can just do it with your cell phone and take a bunch of image. Yeah. It's great. Like photogrammetry still is the state of the art when it comes to the visual aspect of it, because the laser scanners still don't have the best cameras in them. But this is more of an artistic process. Yeah. So what we're seeing this year with those new scanning on your cell phone, which combine photogrammetry, so all the imagery, and the point cloud data as a base map, this is really, there's a lot of potential there.
So what would you say if someone was listening to this and they're an asset manager here in London or a development manager, and they wanted to engage with you and the company, would they contact you and you would recommend a local partner, or we would just suggest one of our kind of laser scanning partners here, and that was information that we'd, you know, pass forward to you?
So honestly, there's a lot of nice scanning companies in the area, and this is true for every single major city worldwide. So it's either you know someone that has a laser scanner, or we can help big customers as well doing the work of finding the guy to do the scanning. But it doesn't need any special requirements more than just take enough scans so we see every angle. That's it. So anyone can create data for us in order to deliver the end user experience we have.
Is your software able, if I then go, do you know what? I forgot two rooms, or that I've got three different pieces of machinery. I've just scanned this bit, one corner. Can I then give it to you and it'll live update the model, or do you have to redo the whole thing?
That's really where we want to be. So today you would have to call the guy again and he would come to you. But the holy grail of data, like I was a bit saying earlier, is that you have this base map, which is visually appealing and accurate. But as you go and you change reality, you want to keep it up to date. And this is where your cell phone is going to be valuable. Like, I don't need this to be perfect. I just don't want it to be out of date. So you can swipe that small room you forgot. There was someone in the back room. Like, let's do it now. And so then you could combine this data and fusion it, mix match it with your existing space, so it keeps being current, because nobody cares about what you said. They want to have the 2 days reality.
That's so interesting.
I mean, this is like, we are definitely going to work with Preview Scan 3D and Nicholas again, and there is something in the offer that will come to light very soon. I want to ask a random question about London and your visit here. I'm still sort of overwhelmed. This is your first ever trip here. What is the one thing you would like to see while you're here if you had a complete free choice? I know the Queen isn't on the balcony anymore. Jubilee's over. Did you see any of the Jubilee?
I was lucky yesterday, to be honest. To visit the Rolls-Royce facility was extremely an honor to be there as an absolute car nuts.
So this is the car manufacturing facility. And where's that?
It's in Chichester.
Chichester.
So that's why it's kind of it's a long ride of train and buses and metro and whatnot. But so for today, I mean, I want to go by the water and see that like old school bridge of yours.
What's okay. great about London, you can literally go to that bridge, walk along for an hour, and pretty much see 50% of all the best stuff.
So the River Thames, that is a really good use of your time. I am blown away by your energy and your generosity, Nicholas. Thank you very, very much. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to
add. I have one statement. I don't get why everyone doesn't have a digital version of any of the buildings that they're in. I think everyone should scan every building that they own or have access to. That would be my first thing. I wanted to know, are you Revit and Autodesk and all these major programs? I mean, you know, I know how to use them, but I can get them in. But ultimately, when you want to try and get like actual technical drawings, it's still quite complicated. Can you plug into Revit? Are you working with them? Is that a future thing that's going to happen?
I think that's the next logical step. So if we go back a bit and think about the CAD environment, which is everything we see around it was built in CAD, they understand that the new reality is that we bring the reality to the digital world in a new format. So I'm pretty sure that soon enough, there's going to be bridge built between the two in order to make it very efficient, because you will never be able to describe this space with this rich quality of information, and there's no such thing as a straight wall, so they understand that.
And did you see the Apple keynote where they talked about the room data thing, so that you can like scan a room and it'll build a 3D like a basic 3D model of it?
There's definitely workflow coming that way where you're kind of, it's called semantic. So you're able to recognize shape because you've trained a machine learning algorithms. This is going to be more and more present in the reality. So what Apple is doing is consistently going to be a nice, simple representation of reality on your cell phone. What we're trying to achieve in terms of the research on our side is really just to be able to extract reality as pieces and make a puzzle out of it. So you can literally click on an equipment and move it around.
So, well, one, I guess you're in London, what, till tomorrow? Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah.
It's such a whistle-stop tour. And then we'll end on this, but what's next? What's the next big thing that you can tell us on air?
There's going to be a lot of like traveling and opportunities for us that we want to be back to meet people. Our first experience this year was in a Geo Week, and it was nice to meet the community and start to understand that they know us by now. I think this year will be an opportunity for us to build meaningful relationships with some vertical, let's say, the CAD environment, the industrials, and then all the hardware manufacturers.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And I guess have a great 12 hours in London.
Enjoy London. Thanks, Nicholas.
I will. Thanks for having me.
Bye.